From the First Midwest Bank State Street Studio, this is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago.
ESPN 1000. This is the home of the White Sox. Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
And then before, what happened? I actually did watch the Swarbrook press conference first because I did watch Tiger on tape. It was on the DVR. So I was watching multiple press conferences this morning, like you said.
You like a good press conference.
I do like a good press conference. And there was a part of me, you know, Jack Swarbrook has had a show on this station. We had many-year partnership with Notre Dame. He's always had a good command, you know. And I thought there was a part of him today, because he talked to Carmen was talking about, hey, why didn't Notre Dame match? Swarbrick mentioned in the press conference that there was really no opportunity to match, that Brian Kelly came to them and says, I'm leaving. And Swarbrick said he wasn't surprised. He says it's been 12 years.
12 years, yeah.
So he wasn't surprised at all. And there was no really an issue of it wasn't about, hey, We can't do what LSU's doing.
I don't think they want to either, to be honest with you.
That was my point. Yeah. That I felt the more I heard him speak about comparatively to where they are today than where they were 12 years ago. Swarbrick mentioned 12 years ago, they're looking for a coach who can rebuild the program,
right,
who could put them back on the map. They had several coaches who didn't do that, you know, and then all of a sudden, hey, could you ever be in a playoff again? Could you ever go to this major bowl game again? And they proved with Brian Kelly that
he did a hell of a job.
They got to a championship game once, right? Or was it twice, the championship game? I know they got to two playoffs with Brian Kelly.
I don't recall them getting to a second championship game, did they?
Was it just the second playoff? Weren't they in the playoffs a couple years ago?
Yeah, but they got to one championship game, I think, 2012.
Right,
that
was the BCS game. Yeah.
That was the Manti Te'o team that got rolled by Bama.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You always said they got trucked.
They did get trucked.
They got trucked. But at least they got put back on the map where Notre Dame could be a top five team year in and year out, top five, top ten, and they're in the conversation every year for a playoff. And that's being a part of the Final Four, which you always say about your pro teams.
Yeah.
That if your pro team has a chance to go to a Final Four and anything could bounce your way in a...
Are they helped or harmed by not being in a conference?
Yes.
I mean, I think it depends on the year, doesn't it?
Well, like this year, they don't have a chance to lose.
Right.
So they can just sit back and watch other teams potentially lose and then get in.
And they could schedule whoever they want.
You could also argue that without the chance to lose, they also don't have the trump card where they could win a championship in a conference and automatically be in. Because if Notre Dame was winning the ACC, they would be in the playoffs.
Yes. Or if they were in the Big Ten.
Well, and when it expands, the committee's meeting this week, like tomorrow, to talk expansion again. When it expands, like, they'll be an at-large bid every year if they win 11 games.
Yeah.
You know?
So, a couple of things. Here's, first of all, I found this humorous, too. And then in the video that accompanies this from a week ago, when Brian Kelly was asked about his future, I don't know if you noticed, he was wearing purple, a purple shirt.
I did not notice that, no.
A purple-colored dress shirt underneath his sport coat. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Accentuates his skin tone, like me.
So Brian Kelly was asked about leaving the program here eventually.
Other than retiring from your current profession, could you see yourself leaving Notre Dame of your own volition?
No. No. I mean, look, I think Mike Tomlin had the best line, right? You know? That fairy godmother comes by with that, you know, $250 million check, my wife would want to take a look at it first. I'd have to run it by her.
Got half of that almost.
$95 million, right?
Yeah, almost half.
But so do you think the money just talked?
Yeah.
Do you think, like,
yeah.
Why say no? I never say never to anything.
I don't know. I mean, like, these guys are not, they're not Fortune 500 CEOs. They're football coaches. And I don't mean to diminish what they do or, you know, how well they do it, but, like, This is what they coach ball. Like, I don't expect him to be able to, you know, you're right. I mean, just say, hey, maybe. I get it, but look, I think he said two things without saying two things. How can you turn away that money? Was he 60?
Yeah,
50, 60.
60?
He's got one more spin at this. I don't think, there's two things. I don't think Notre Dame can consistently give, can consistently compete for, despite, as you said, they've been in a playoff a couple of times. I don't think they can do what LSU does or Alabama can do or what Ohio State can do consistently. I think what he told you today is the money was too good. Didn't think probably Notre Dame would even want to match it. And I can't win a national title here. So I'm going to go somewhere where they will pay me $10 million a year. And I can win a national title there because the three guys that went before me all won a national title there.
And here's Jack Swarbrick, the AD. I thought, again, that there was a part of him that he seemed excited for this. So what are the characteristics that he's looking for in the next head coach at Notre Dame?
Fit at Notre Dame is number one. This is a unique place. And it is important that you understand and appreciate the uniquenesses. And so that's a critical element of this. Increasingly, the role of college football head coaches is a CEO role. And so clearly understanding your approach to building and managing staff becomes very important. Next, what's your approach to playing the game? What's your style? What do you do? How do you achieve victory on the football field? And then a whole list of things that relate to attracting and developing great student athletes, and especially the development part of it. I'm really pleased with where our recruiting is today and the improvements we've made in it, the resources we put into it. But I still want to be a great development program. And so what are your ideas on developing young men to be great players, great champions, and great parts of our community?
See, you guys are pretty adamant. And what you said about LSU and Bama, I can't argue with. Mm-hmm. Like LSU and Bama, you are automatically playing with a head start, automatically with the recruiting base and everything that they have there. But I think that Notre Dame can be in it year in and year out. If Ohio State can do it in Columbus, Ohio, and with this team being an 11-win team and consistently being, I mean, how often have they finished in the top 10 recently? They are to the next stage now of this modern era. If they get the right guy there who can continue to guide them forward, I think they can be continue to be a football power with a chance to win a championship every few years.
Yeah, we had this. It was a good conversation. We had it earlier today in the IDOT bullpen brought to you by IDOT's Life or Death Illinois.com. Wearing your seatbelt is the single best way to defend yourself in the event of a crash. So buckle up and stay safe. I think you make a good point about, look, I said this earlier. I've gone to Notre Dame on a couple of occasions. I'm a North, you know, or a Midwestern guy. I don't mind it. But and it's a beautiful campus, and they've got a tremendous history. Going to South Bend on a recruiting trip is different than going to Gainesville or Tuscaloosa or Baton Rouge or wherever you're going. There's just a different allure, in my opinion.
What about going to Austin? Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas is beautiful.
It is.
How well have they done?
They haven't done as well.
How well have the Gators done recently?
I think recruiting, they don't recruit the same, you know, level of guys, although they've had some good recruiting classes. You just heard Jack Swarbrick say it. I mean, the number one thing they're looking for their next coaches is fit.
Fit at Notre Dame.
Fit. How do you play? Great student athletes. There's other quotes out there about how they want to continue to, you know, the Catholic schools across the United States, and they want to, you know, their foothold in there as well. They're, and I don't say this is good, bad, or indifferent. This is who they are, and I admire them for it in a lot of ways. The number one thing, you didn't hear Jack Swarbrick say, the number one thing is to win a national championship. And of course, they would want to do that.
Well,
they just have different priorities
there. He said what is the characteristic of coaches, not what's the goal. He said, what characteristics are you looking for?
I just think things are done differently there, and I think that's a good thing.
You're right.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. They just, winning is not, It's very, very important. If it was the ultimate thing, they would have a different approach to their student athletes and all kinds of other things. It's just a different place. It's a great place. Like, I'd love for my kid to go there. If my kid wanted to go to school there, you know, I mean, you'd be thrilled if your kid could get into Notre Dame and go to Notre Dame and be a student athlete there. But listen, don't take it from me. I mean, take it from Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly basically told you I can't win a national title there.
Maybe there's another guy who's better than him.
Could be.
He's not the best. Like, I'm just saying, if they get the right guy. Now, you can't Bob Davy it. You can't Tyrone Willingham it. Who is the guy that Kelly even took? I'm trying to go back and think, who was the last coach before Kelly?
It's a good question. My college football memory. I mean, this was 13 years ago.
Was it Charlie? Now, not who took over for Charlie Weiss?
Wasn't Bob Davy after Charlie Weiss? I thought he was.
No,
but I
thought Weiss was after Davy.
Okay,
because Davy was after Holtz. I want to say it was Davy, like Willingham. Oh, Charlie Weiss put him back on the map. Was there someone after Weiss and before Kelly? But I
think you also look at. What are kids looking for when they go visit schools? Part of the kids, you know, when you're recruiting this level of kid, like these top 50 kids, they want to know what place helps them get to the NFL. Look at what Ohio State has done with the number of first-round draft picks they've had across the board. Notre Dame, as good as they've been, they don't match up.
But didn't that change, like, as soon as Tressel got there? Didn't they have many down years at Ohio State?
They had down years, you know, yeah.
Like, what weren't, like, the late 80s and 90s not as good? You know?
They had down years.
Again, there are teams that go dormant for a while or don't win on a level. Notre Dame is built to back up to now where they are a top 5 to top 10 team almost every year.
Well,
yes?
I would say top 10, yeah. Why are the kids going to Alabama and not Notre Dame?
Well, look, again, that's a factory. Like, you're right. I'm not denying anything you're saying about LSU. I think there are enough kids to go around who are good football players to compete for championships. You have a better chance at Alabama and LSU, but I don't think that – I still think the Notre Dame job is great.
Oh, I think it's a fantastic – it's definitely a top 10 job, probably a top 5 or 6 job, but – it being a good job has prestige attached to it. It doesn't mean it gives you the best chance to win, but I think it's a fantastic job. I wouldn't argue against that.
It went Lou Holtz, Bob Davy, George O'Leary, who didn't actually coach anything because he misrepresented his academic credentials. Tyrone Willingham, Charlie Weiss, Brian Kelly.
All right, so it was. So we basically hit all the ones. So, and look, they've taken steps. Like, Weiss put them back on the map, right? Those were some good, fun teams with Brady Quinn. They had that great, wasn't that the Bush Push game against USC?
I think one of
the most memorable football games I remember. And then they got close, and then Brian Kelly came, and he took them to a national championship game. Not a championship, but to another playoff. So
I don't think, also, I don't know what they're willing to spend on their coach. I just get the feeling that they're not a $9 million a year. They're going to tell you, look, this is still football, and we're not going to spend $9 million on our football coach.
You want to weigh in on the Notre Dame job, 332-3776. It's been a long debate, especially here in Chicago. Coming up next, though, we'll get you updated on all the signings in Major League Baseball. Was Jeff Passan shocked by the flurry of activity here before the deadline? And does he believe the Cubs and Sox are going to make some moves? We'll talk to our insider, Jeff Passan, coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000, and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Whatever's on your mind, whether it's Cubs and Sox, really non-action, or it's the Brian Kelly conversation in Notre Dame, 332-3776. Let's talk first to Jeff Passan during a very, very busy time here, too, before the deadline tomorrow night at midnight, when it appears the MLB owners will lock the players out when the collective bargaining agreement ends.
Yeah, it runs out.
Yeah. And Jeff joins us right now on the Corona Hotline. Jeff, how have you been?
I could use some sleep, but yeah. Everything's been great.
You should be able to get some. If I would have texted you or had you on the show 3 weeks ago and said, Jeff, what will action be like here at the start of free agency, would this have surprised you?
Actually, if you go back and read a story that I wrote after the GM meetings, I'm trying to find it here, and I'm gonna quote myself, which is a completely obnoxious thing to do.
No, we love it.
But
let's just tell Jeff Passan.
Honestly, I don't give a damn because I'm a completely obnoxious person. So that's
yes.
great.
That's why we love you.
Second that.
Oh, see, you know what? This is the problem.
You got a bad computer.
No, that's it. Just it logs me out. I have to log back in, and now I'm just delaying.
You are a pain
radio
in the ass.
Obnoxious.
Obnoxious SOB.
All right, here we go.
Yeah.
The fallout is a sense that Corey Seager, the magnificent Los Angeles Dodgers shortstop, and Marcus Semien, the dynamic Toronto infielder, are increasingly likely to sign before December 1st.
Damn. That's
two paragraphs later.
Nailed it.
A divided market then may be the result, with aggressive teams that have shown a desire to spend, Detroit, Texas, maybe Seattle and Toronto, among those executing a flurry of deals in the days leading up to and Boom. Perhaps even on December 1st.
In layman's terms, explain this to us. So 2 years ago, no one wanted to sign anybody, and all these free agents...
I thought you were going to say in layman's terms, explain to you how I kick ass.
Yeah, you're great. You're great. Layman's term, tell us how you kick ass.
Kick ass. There you go.
That's it. Simple as that. Hey, guys, I kick ass.
You know?
Back to you. That's what I do.
God.
It's on my business
Anyone
card.
Listening and hearing me for the first time, I promise I'm not a terrible person. Like this is just such an end zone dance, and I need to stop.
Yeah, you want a massage from us? Yeah. Like after
Jeff Passan, I kick ass. What do you do? Love it,
Tom.
God,
I
missed you.
Did you ever do an end zone dance?
No. Well, I didn't get in there frequently.
Right.
But times. When I did. Like, I was usually so distraught or out of breath that I just trying to get to the sideline and get some oxygen and collect myself. But when I got there, you know, there was one time when we beat the Saints. Like, at the Saints were 7-0 or 8-0, and we went down there and we beat them, and I scored the game-winning touchdown, and I actually did spike the ball. I got crazy. I drank like 12 beers on the flight home, too.
Yeah.
But like on the field, I did spike the ball. Yeah. I had two catches for like 15 yards and a touchdown. That was a big day for me, Jeff.
Hey, listen, 9 touchdowns in 60 games. I'll take it.
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah. Not bad for a small, slow, unathletic guy.
Apparently, you do end zone celebrations after.
Yeah. Hey, what do you do? He's probably got the kids coming into his room right now, and they're setting up like one of those end zone things where everyone's, you know, rowing a boat or something. Hey, take a picture of me.
It's funny. I'm actually out of breath because I'm dancing right now. Great.
So great. So in layman's terms, why 2 years ago did they not want to sign anybody, but now all of a sudden they're in a rush before a major labor stoppage, possibly major? Why are they in a hurry to sign people?
Because deadlines work. Because human beings have a tendency to want to gravitate towards security. And I think the best of us can deal without security, you know, can navigate those very rough waters where you don't know where something's going to end up, but you have faith in something, whether it's yourself, the market, God, whatever it may be. In this case, though, there are people who wanted to get deals locked in to know where they're going to be in spring training when it happens. And there are teams that wanted to get cost certainty on it. And the combination of that has led to this supercharged market where we've seen over $1.6 billion spent to this point, which is a lot of money. The record offseason guy is $2.1 billion in free agent spending. We're at 1.6, and Carlos Correa hasn't signed. Trevor Story hasn't signed. Chris Bryant hasn't signed. Nick Castellanos hasn't signed. I mean, we can go on and on. There are a lot of very talented players who are going to get nine-figure contracts who have not signed to this point. And so not only are we going to exceed that $2.1 billion, it's going to be smashed when it's all said and done, I think. It just may not be for a couple of months.
Jeff, you obviously predicted that Corey Seager would sign, but could you have envisioned a contract that was worth $325 million?
You know, I was asked when I was on Michael Kay's show during the postseason. I was asked who's going to be a shortstop. So clearly, the level of my predictions it's not 100%. He said who's going to be the shortstop for the Yankees next year, and I said Corey Seager, and he said how much is it going to be for, and I said more than $300 million.
Wow.
So I anticipated the $300 million plus contract. I did think it was probably going to take more years because Corey Seager, you know, 27 years old, really young guy. I thought it was going to be a 12-year deal to get there as opposed to 10 years. I mean, you look at – it's very interesting. You look at Bryce Harper's contract right now. Bryce Harper has 10 years and $248 million left on his contract. Corey Seager, granted, younger now, but starting 10 years and $325 million.
Wow. Jeff, how long do you anticipate this to drag out, though? I mean, like, there are a lot of issues. What are the most important issues, and what is the end game here?
I think it's going to be between 60 and 90 days. So I think we're looking at beginning to end of February, and I'm hoping it's closer to 1st through 15th than 16th through, hold on, are we in a leap year?
I have no idea.
I don't think so. No, 2 years
no,
right
we are
before
not,
the
we
pandemic.
Are not in the leap year. So, yeah. So yeah, 16 through 28. The issues are pretty simple. Major League Baseball does not want to pay players significantly more and wants to keep restrictions on the competitive balance tax threshold relatively low and wants expanded playoffs. The MLBPA wants a number of things. They want players to be paid younger. They want competitive integrity where you don't have as many teams either tanking or just not trying as they are. They want artificial restrictions taken off of free agency like draft pick compensation and other things that mess with the market. And they want their guys to get paid more. Like they want unfettered free agency, essentially, and it's tough to argue right now that free agency is broken when you see it going nuts as it is, but some of the same issues that the players have been bringing up for years, whether it's service time manipulation, which, you know, people in Chicago with Chris Bryant certainly know well, or tanking, which people in Chicago with the Cubs certainly know well. Even though both of those things have behooved the Cubs and led to the 2016 championship, for the sport, by and large, they are bad things. When you have teams that are anti-competitive, what does that say about the integrity of the sport? When you have players who aren't on the big league roster, when they are among the 26 best in the organization, what does that say about the sport? These are issues that could and should be solved, but there's a chasm between the parties right now that's going to lead to this lockout in all likelihood over the next, you know, what are we at now? 30 hours? And I think it's going to be one that lasts for a while and hopefully gets resolved before any games are lost.
Jeff, our fans are mad on both sides of town. You have Cubs fans who heard Tom Ricketts say in his season ticket newsletter that they would be competitive in 2022, and they're signing these, these small deals.
Clint Frazier,
who didn't pan out in New York, former first-round pick. Mm-hmm. And then you have Sox fans who can taste success in the postseason, but they're coming off two postseason appearances where they didn't even win a series, and they'd like to go over the top with someone at second base and right field, another starting pitcher, and they're not linked to anybody. Do you have any good news for either side of town?
Well, if the Cubs were going to do something big, I'm not going to say they missed out on their opportunity because there are still some players out there. I do not think Chris Bryant's going to be coming back to town. I do not think Kyle Schwarber is going to be coming back to town. Trevor Story is very interesting, and would be the sort of person around whom I would like to build if I were running a team. Certainly, Carlos Correa would be a great fit. He's going to cost, though. I mean, he's going to cost a lot more money than the Cubs were willing to pay any of their homegrown players. So I don't anticipate them being in that market. The White Sox at this point, listen, they need upgrades, but I feel like they're more incremental upgrades than overhauls. I the fit with Michael Conforto is very good in a number of respects. Positionally, he's left-handed in a lineup that needs a left-handed bat. I know you give up a draft pick, and that's not great. And I know you're signing a guy potentially who's coming off of the worst season of his career, but I think Michael Conforto does make a lot of sense for the White Sox. The outfield market just simply hasn't started moving to this point. And you see that with Nick Castellanos not signing, with Conforto not signing. Seiya Suzuki, the star from Japan, isn't likely to move before the lockout. So there are options still there for the Sox that make sense. And frankly, the Sox are just playing a more urgent game right now than the Cubs. And Tom Ricketts can say whatever he wants. Cubs aren't going to be very good next year. And where I could see them potentially making gains is on the lower ends of the market. And they're not sexy signings, but and I'm not comparing them to this team because they're not going to go out and win 107 games next year. But the San Francisco Giants were not a sexy team by any means. They had Buster Posey, who is a likely Hall of Famer. They have Brandon Crawford, who's solid, Brandon Belt, who's been doing this for a while. But what the hallmark of the Giants was their depth. And they built that depth by going out and making a number of canny moves that you look at as a fan and say, what the hell? But in the end, you're like, what the hell? You know, this is actually pretty great. That, I think, is where the Cubs are likelier to maneuver and operate. And that, frankly, guys, is just going to be a matter of evaluative capacity. Do your evaluators, do your analysts pick the right guys? And if they do, how do you leverage that, David Ross, into winning?
Good stuff.
Yep.
Jeff, you kick ass.
You kick ass.
I do.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Have a great holiday, all right, Jeff?
Thanks for your time.
Same to you, boys. Take care.
He's the best, Jeff Madison. Yeah, he's super good. He's good at his job. He's funny. There's someone on the line who wants the Bears to sell to Jeff Bezos. There's someone on the line who says Notre Dame can't win. There's someone on the line who says he doesn't like the Sox moves. What's on your mind? 332-3776. And some new holiday parody songs to debut, all coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie
on ESPN 1000.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Continue to take your phone calls. Don't forget Friday, a few days away here. Start making plans, text your friends. We're going to be at the Howard Street Inn for Miller Time this Friday, one of our favorite spots in Niles. It's on Howard Street, my old neck of the woods. So come on out, north side, near north side, basically, of the city and the near northern burbs.
Would you rank it your number one or number two favorite spot?
Yeah, that we have a promo that we'll start running about that.
I didn't know
over
about that.
Me gambling and losing prior to my last stop at the Howard Street Inn. I don't know if the owner, who's a great guy, is going to like that this is being affiliated with that or dislike
it. That's a you problem. That's not a him problem.
Well, no, I know. But like now this is being associated with that moment. Like his bar and restaurant, which is a great, great spot, is going to be affiliated with
that
moment.
I think the truck stop that you you disposed of your stuff is probably, they're a little more upset with the situation than he is.
All right. So come see us either way at the Howard Street Inn in Niles on Howard, brought to you by Miller Lite.
Do you still have those shorts?
I don't think so, no. Okay. I think I got rid of them. I think I tried to salvage them, but I did not. Put it under some hot water and a little soap. Pre-treat it. Put it in the washer, see if it comes out. Joe and Downers.
Throw a little bleach on them.
But Joe, you're on ESPN 1000. Save me, Joe.
Hey, boys. How we doing?
Good.
Wanted to comment on the Notre Dame coaching situation because I do think it's a top job in the country. And I got to preface my comments by saying I love Notre Dame. Both of my grandfathers were Notre Dame grads. It's in my blood, you know. And it broke my heart to realize that until a couple of things change, they aren't going to be able to get over the hump. And it has to do with bringing in impactful recruits on skill positions, corners, DBs, receivers, running backs. And you can't bring in those guys unless Notre Dame lowers their academic standards, which they'll never do. I mean, it's a school that can, you know, get NFL talent at, you know, in the trenches and right. things like that. But those guys that want to come in just to focus on football aren't going to want to make the investment that Notre Dame requires from their academics. And Brian Kelly, in my opinion, exhausted everything that the program has to offer. I mean, it's the best run of football in Notre Dame history, and that's saying something. It goes back hundreds of years. So, you know, a lot of things got to happen, in my opinion, yeah. and it's tough.
I think that, look, I know that they probably keep higher standards than others. But you hear that Kelly, in over the course of his time there, in conversations with the athletic department, they found more leeway to get students in that maybe right. weren't able to get in before.
You could replay that call from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We've taken that call for decades in the city, you know, about yeah. with Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz banged his head against the wall for that. And on and on and on, that call has always been made about if they truly want to be top. But they don't. Like, I mean, they don't want to sacrifice at least ask from the athletes.
Think of where Jack Swarbrick is coming from. His team is possibly going to be in this playoff. And they haven't lowered their standards, and they're not paying their coach $10 million.
Right, right.
So he is accomplishing, from his perspective, probably feels like they're accomplishing everything.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Jimmy on the north side, you're on ESPN 1000. How's the fam, Jim?
Oh, fantastic, fellas. Happy belated Thanksgiving. Nothing like stuffing in a Cairo Santos pitch shot. I wanted to bring this up. I'm not going to say this is for sure legitimate, but I believe I was down in Florida and I heard a couple sources talk about this. So let me break it down. Obviously, everybody knows Virginia's got 11 kids, 40 grandchildren who are now procreating 100 great-grandchildren. Okay, these great-grandchildren need mouths to feed. What's going on right now is that Bezos is been involved with Chicago over the past 11 months. Him and his wife have donated over $500 million to Chicago charities. In 2017, they had a second headquarters for Amazon pitched to them that included a sports complex. And really, there's a lot that lines up over the past summer with a potential buyout by Bezos. And I think here's the thing. This guy has wanted to get it in the NFL. He has a blank canvas with the Chicago Bears, the charter franchise. He's got 350 acres to build Amazon land for the NFL. He's got a franchise quarterback. It's the clean house. The McCaskies will continue to hold a percentage of the team. The grandchildren will cash out and be silver spoons. And things are lining up right now where it makes sense. Once that land's approved to be built upon, I think you're going to see things move fast. And if you look at the Ryan Group, they don't have the incentive to build out the stadium. And the current owners, they don't want the, you know, backlash of Bears' performance, which is their fault, but nonetheless, they want to move on. And this is kind of from the great grandchildren generation. So, interesting stuff. Want to hear what you guys think. And, of course, tell the family you're my best.
Thank you, Jimmy. I don't know if it's a pipe dream because Bezos or Bezos? Give me if one time.
Which, Bezos.
Bezos wants in on the NFL. Has for a while. And I like he mentioned there are ties. He's $100 million. I think he donated to the President Obama library that's being built. Right, a lot of charities in Chicago. He probably has charities all over. I would never say that that can't possibly happen.
I don't know.
You can sell me on that. I'd be in here for it.
I think there will come a time, probably, where a sale will take place. I don't know when that'll be. I think it'd be silly not to at least entertain the possibility of that.
Yeah, that would be great. Kevin in Lincolnwood, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Kev.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Just to be clear before, I didn't say I didn't like the White Sox moves in general. But for instance, I think the Graveman signing was good. They right. definitely needed to do that. I don't like what I heard about Lehuri coming back on 3 years. Now, I don't know what the details of that contract are yet. So, and I don't know if anybody does, so I don't know how much money they're paying him. And this isn't to disrespect Lehuri either. I like Lehuri. I think he plays hard, but we know what we have in Lehuri, and I think everybody would agree he's not a starter.
Right.
Yes.
So if he's used properly, I mean, Kevin, is Garcia's contract really going to prevent you from doing anything? And if it does, that states more about the ownership than
yeah,
Garcia.
We don't know because we don't know the details of it.
Yeah, I can't.
But for that reason, though, this is why I don't think you do Lehuri any more than 1 or 2 years. What I'm concerned about is this. I'm concerned, and I hope that I'm wrong, and I think I'm wrong, but it just gets the wheels turning. What I don't want them to think is that, oh, well, we can just roll with Lehuri at second base this year.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And we'll just see where we're going.
Yeah, I agree with that.
No, I think Rick Hahn's smarter than that, and I want him to show me that.
Well, I think it's I would say, Kevin, what Rick Hahn wants and what Rick Hahn is allowed to do, I think, could be different conversations.
Like with the manager.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's right. And hopefully he's a utility guy. And he's like the 10th, 11th guy who plays everywhere and still plays a starting type role because injuries and resting guys. 3-3-2-3-7-7-6. We'll debut those holiday parody songs nice. Coming up next.
This hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball, Chicago's Big Ten team. Coach Collins and the Cats host DePaul, Illinois, Purdue, and more at Welsh Ryan Arena this winter. Buy tickets now at nusports.com.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
LeBron is out tonight. The Lakers just announced he's entering the health protocol. So health and safety protocol. So I don't know what the hell that means. If it means he's vaccinated and they just got to make sure he's okay.
Close contact maybe with somebody.
But usually if you're close contact and you're vaccinated, you should be fine. I thought. But I don't know. So he's out tonight. We'll follow the story.
There's a good NBA game on tonight, my friend. On TNT, you've got Golden State at Phoenix.
I like it.
Golden State's 18-2. Do you know what Phoenix's record is?
They've rallied here lately. They've had a good like last couple of days. Let me go 16-5.
Close. 17-3.
All right. Red hot.
Booker versus Steph.
Yeah. It's going to be a good. Is that TNT or ESPN?
TNT. All 9 right. o'clock tonight.
Black, let's debut a couple songs before Black and Abdallah come up here at 6 o'clock. We debuted some earlier. They were very good. They were a little off the beaten path, which we've been asking for. Download your holiday parody songs to ESPNParody.com.
Andy Clements gives us, this is a good one. You guys are bags.
Major bag alert. Major bag alert. Sylvie Abdallah. Black Waddle Yurko Carm and Danny. Midway, Jeff Miller, Jay Hood, Cappy, Major Bags Alert.
All right.
He's calling us all bags.
Not going to win, but I enjoyed it.
You know, like that for
yes.
when they play.
Well, you guys are bags.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Edward Cook brings us Wet the Halls.
Excuse me. Come on, Grandpa. We got to get going. We're going to miss tip-off.
Oh, don't worry about that, Marge, but traffic is kind of heavy. I better pull over. Pop the hood and check the fluid. Two martinis running right through me. Pants are down around the ankles. Cars are whizzing by on the Kennedy. Play the wind and make a puddle. Don't laugh, son, this might be you someday. Sorry that we missed the intros, but oh, this is better than chocolate cake. Yes, this is better than chocolate cake.
He is such a good listener. It's such an inside story about my grandfather, who I would call Papa, who would have two martinis before every Bulls game. We'd drive down the Kennedy, and he'd have to either pee on the side of the road, or we'd have to rush inside the Chicago Stadium, and he'd have to go right to the bathroom. And
then
he would stand at the stall at the Chicago Stadium and go, better than chocolate cake. If he were around,
that's a good listener
that.
Right there.
Yeah, that's Ed Cook's been a finalist before.
Yeah.
Multi-time finalist, I believe.
He also had the prop last year, remember? Yes. He went to perform and he pulled out the bald cap as Cap. It was fantastic.
So good.
Andrew Zola, he brings us Immunized.
And Family.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers got the COVID.
Oh, no.
Could the team play well without him?
Then we learned about all his lies.
Immunized.
He thought he was safe until some
sponsors lined right up to drop him. He's not a very honest guy.
Immunized.
We finally saw Jordan Love
and feel so relieved that he stinks.
Bears fans have always dreamed of
a bad Green Bay Packers QB.
We heard about his COVID
on the McAfee radio show. Oh.
He tried to explain his side.
Immunize.
Pretty good. Original. That's original. In the Family Affair, it sounds like. Like caroling in the news. We got to send that to ESPN Milwaukee. Can we send that up there? I'm sure they would get a kick out of it. Latta would love it. They'd all love it up there.
John Maurer has bisexual.
What?
We've got some breaking news. A Chicago man just admitted he cheers for both the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. He made the shocking admission exclusively to WGN.
Got me a problem. I need some advice. My loyalty's been put to the test. Cheered for the Sox back in 2005, but in 16 the Cubs were the best. I jump on the bandwagon just like a frog for whoever's in the pennant race. You see, I'm the type of guy who likes ketchup on his hot dog. I'm Chicago's greatest disgrace.
Mustard only, sir.
Maybe you'll get sentimental when you hear my plight. I love both teams, and that's my folly. I'm bisexual, that's right, by golly. At Old Comiskey, I drank 20-ounce beers. At Wrigley, a sip of fine wine. And I drank at them both on the very same day with a roadie aboard the Red Line.
Next stop, Edison.
Maybe you'll get sentimental when you hear my plight. I love both teams on top of the Central. I'm bisexual, so please be gentle. Don't tell my wife that I cheer for the Sox. She just bought blue underwear. If she finds I've been hanging out on the south side in my sleep, she'll cut off more than my hair.
Maybe we should have more Bears songs, guys. What do you think?
No. Today, I think, was a rousing success with regard to the entries.
Yeah, it was a good job, good effort. Yes. But not, I mean, and again, short and to the point, especially if you don't have a home run for the entire
Yes, you know my minutes. Attention span is very short as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes. It sounded good on paper. Mm-hmm. The play execution was like a Matt Nagy play again. It got...
Had to call two timeouts.
Yeah. Two timeouts, and it lost about a yard. In the process. But good. Keep them coming. ESPNParody.com. That's where you enter. More details coming in the next few days. Great job by everybody, though. Thank you to Jeff Passan today, Barstool, Big Cat, Bleck and Abdallah. Great job by them. And they're coming up in 2 short minutes. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Tuesday night.
It's the classic.
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all a good night.